Please welcome in our new sponsor, Underdog Fantasy. Go to underdogfantasy.com and you'll discover that Underdog Fantasy is the best and easiest place to play fantasy sports. Underdog Fantasy lets you draft a fantasy dream team in minutes. Sign up now with the code POWERTRIP and you'll double your first deposit up to $100 in bonus cash when you make your first deposit of $10 or more. That's right, deposit $100 and get $100 for free. Underdog keeps it simple with their easy-to-use website and mobile apps. Pick between 2 and 5 players to fill out your pick'em slip, get every pick right, and take home some cold, hard cash. Use that promo code POWERTRIP and get your first deposit doubled up by $100 by Underdog. That's underdogfantasy.com. Use the promo code POWERTRIP today.
The upcoming presentation is a 2-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
What's up, guys? It's the phenomenal AJ Styles. You're listening to the 2-Man Power Trip.
Hey, Johnny. Cool, man. What's going on? We ready to go or what?
Welcome to the 2-Man Power Trip of Wrestling. I'm your host, JP John Paz. With me today, very special guest. You may know him as Mace or Massé of the Maximum Male Models. He is a former NFL player, former WWE superstar. He is Brennan Williams. Brennan, welcome to the 2-Man Power Trip. How you doing?
Hey, John. Thanks for having me.
What is going on in your world? I feel like you've been super busy lately.
I am very fortunate to be very busy. We've been all over the country. We're going to be all over the world. We've got a trip to Poland coming up at the beginning of February. A lot of good stuff coming up. Very fortunate.
Well, I've never been to the motherland of Poland. So
yeah, I saw your name and I figured you you might have a little bit of, you might be a little inclined to that.
Yes, that perked my ears up. Like, oh, Poland. Damn, you're going to Poland. That's awesome.
Yeah, nice. We're going to Poland. I didn't even know they had wrestling in Poland.
Yeah, me neither. That's not something that I thought was very common. Interesting. I love that. Man, you guys are kind of, I don't know, more popular than ever, I would say. I mean, you guys are everywhere.
It's crazy. I was just saying earlier today, it feels like I've already wrestled more this year than I did last year. It's it's been a lot of traveling. It's been a lot of actually being in ring, more time in the ring. Absolutely, for sure.
What's it like getting back out there and kind of, you know, doing the independent thing?
It's so much fun. That's the biggest thing I've kind of noticed going into the independents is the freedom. And it's just the ability to enjoy it again. It's not, I mean, it's a job, obviously. I'm making a living off of it. But at the same time, like, you know, I'm not super paranoid about everything, or I'm not super worried about this direction or that direction. It's very freeing in being able to work however I want to work and then making something out of it. So I guess the buck stops with me as opposed to it stopping with Vince or Hunter or whoever my boss was.
That's very cool. It's very freeing. Like, you have the freedom. You can kind of do what you want. You don't have to say, oh, this is such a great idea. This is awesome. And then them saying, nah, let's do something else, or like not getting it out there. It's so much better, right?
Right. And I can immediately get the feedback of, because of the platform of having been a former WWE superstar, people are starting to see it. And, you know, it's like a whole different type of momentum that's completely reliant on me. And I think that's really cool.
You know, so interesting about you. It's like, man, what a great personality. He's a big guy. He's a big dude, former NFL player. So I was looking up. I was like, wait a second. His dad was Brent Williams. I remember Brent Williams. He was awesome for the Patriots for like almost a decade, really. So I was like, oh, yes, my God, I can't believe when you were wrestling, I didn't realize your dad was Brent Williams. He was the man.
Yeah, no, my dad was a great NFL player. He played for 11 years, I believe, in total, mostly for the Patriots. Also for the Jets and for the Seahawks. But I grew up in New England. That's where they're actually still based. My brother is still there. He works for the Patriots. He's a scouting. What is his? He's a very important talent scout for them now. I forget what his exact position is, but he's doing really good over there. So as things change over there, hopefully things keep going well for him.
Nice. Now, as far as you growing up in that area, were you a big like WWF guy or were you a wrestling fan at all or not really?
I was always more of a wrestling fan than I was a football fan.
Oh, wow. I'm surprised.
Yeah. Yeah. I played football, but I think partially because my dad was in the NFL, it was very normal for me. There was nothing particularly special about going to a Patriots game. It was something that I did. It's something that my dad did. My brother did it. It was kind of just like, you know, I don't want to say a chore because I enjoyed playing it, but it was just a part of life. But when I discovered wrestling, probably when I was about 9 or 10 years old playing the video game, I played the video game first. I immediately fell in love with it because I've always been on the more artsy side of the spectrum, less of a jock, more of, you know, a theater geek. So to find something that kind of combined the fact that you could be a big muscle-bound jock, but also be creative and present a character and have cool music and, you know, it's performance. It was really perfect for me. And it was something that I always intended to do after my football career was over. And thankfully, it's what happened.
Yeah. Interesting, though, with the football that you like kind of gravitated to wrestling more. Was it almost too much football because your dad was in the NFL and then you were playing? Was it almost just too much pressure on you to be a football player, even though you did play?
It wasn't pressure. I think it was just overexposure. You know, and I didn't I like watching myself play football. I don't really care about watching other people play football. I like watching everybody wrestle. I really like watching that's the opposite. I actually hate watching myself wrestle, but I like watching everybody else wrestle.
When you're, you know, a fan and you get into the video games, what was like the video game or who was like the wrestlers that really caught your eye?
Well, the first game I played was SmackDown versus... No, it wasn't SmackDown versus Raw. It was Here Comes the Pain. The one with Brock Lesnar on the cover. I got it for the PlayStation 2. I was immediately drawn to Kane. I thought Kane was so cool, and I wanted to be the Black Kane for my entire life. And I thought for a second that when I was in Retribution and they threw a mask on me, I was like, yes, this is my moment to become the Black Kane. Unfortunately, everything around that was rancid. But I did get to, you know, flex my Black Kane muscles for a little bit.
Man, Kane, of all people. I always thought that he was one of those guys that everyone kind of would want to aspire to be just for, like, career length. You know what I mean? Like, cool character, big dude, but my God, he was in the WWE for forever. Always felt like that was a guy everybody should kind of aspire to be.
Yeah. Well, when you think about him, you think of somebody who was in WWE for God knows how long. Very few major injuries that had him sidelined for a long time. Very consistent, able to play a lot of roles. In a way, I guess I was kind of Kane-like. Without the world title runs and all that, but just, you know, whether it be Kane in the Authority, Kane without a mask, Kane with a mask, Kane in comedy, Kane is a scary, you know, monster heel. He's really able to do a lot of things. And, I kind of pride myself on being able to do the same.
When you are looking to get in the business, right? Before, obviously you can't just automatically just appear in WWE. You did go for training with Booker T, right? Like before you decided to really kind of jump in?
I did. I was afforded a tryout because I was a former football player.
Okay, awesome.
Nice. Yeah. I was in the NFL and kind of an outspoken wrestling fan. So I was contacted by someone within WWE before I had stopped playing football. And they kind of just, you know, here's my number. Listen, if you ever want to try out when you're done, let us know. So I had that lined up after I was done playing football. And the first person I contacted was Booker T, because when I was playing with the Houston Texans, I used to go to the reality of wrestling shows that he has there in Houston. So I was like, hey, Booker, I have this tryout coming up in a couple of months. If you wouldn't mind, maybe train me so that I don't look like a complete goof when I get into the ring. And that's exactly what he did. I trained there for a couple of months, did my tryout. The tryout was successful, but at that point, you kind of had to wait. They weren't really in the immediate signing stage that they are in, that they are right now. So I did a year with Reality of Wrestling. I call that my illustrious independent run, but I only worked there. But yeah, that's how I broke in.
When you're making the transition from football to wrestling, is that easy? I mean, there's a bunch of guys you could think of off the top of your head, you know, Ernie Ladd, Bill Goldberg, there's a bunch of Vader. I mean, there's a bunch of guys that went from football to wrestling, but is it that easy of a transition?
There's a lot of things that apply. I think I've always felt that if you are a good athlete and you're passionate about learning, you know, the art of wrestling, it does come kind of naturally to you if that's what you're inclined to do. But at the same time, I'll always laugh. Booker never taught me how to roll because he assumed that I knew how to roll from football. So there was a lot of I was like, no, Booker, we don't roll in football. No. That's not a thing.
No.
Obviously, you know, there are motions that you kind of have to learn, and I'm honestly relearning a lot of those motions right now that I'm getting back into the ring every week. But the biggest thing for me was I never wanted to be a dangerous football player. Because, you know, there's a lot of football players that become wrestlers, and they're kind of known for being maybe more on the stiffer side, injuring people. And because I have such a respect for this business, and I was always such a fan, and I understood that stigma about football players, I never really wanted to apply that to myself. So I was always very careful about not hurting people, and I continue, knock on wood, to not hurt people.
Nice. With Booker, you think you got more respect because you're an ex-NFLer? You know what I mean? Does that kind of like raise his eye? Like, oh my God, this guy was a pro athlete. Does that make him kind of like, oh, I'm definitely going to train this guy? He wants you on the resume, so to speak.
I think so. And because I had the WWE tryout laid out already, it was kind of like, oh yeah, no, I'm going to be a part of this guy's story. And he absolutely was and still is. I was just back at Reality of Wrestling last weekend for a very big show, the first show of the year. Slammuary, and I think those videos will start going up on YouTube in the next couple of weeks. But no, Booker was a great help to me, and he was very hands-on, which I understand isn't necessarily the case at a lot of schools, where you know the name on the school isn't necessarily the one that's, you know, in the ring with you teaching you. Booker was always very much hands-on with me.
Can't get a better trainer than that, right? I mean, geez, fantastic, one of the all-time trainer. Best.
Yeah, it's funny because he kind of assumed that he wouldn't have me for long. I got into matches pretty quickly, and I didn't know what I was doing. But he would call my matches for me. And when he called my matches for me, he just inserted his moves. So like he was calling matches and he was like, this is what I would do. So then I just ended up with like half of his moveset because those were, it's just like, oh yeah, that's where, oh yeah, hit him with the Harlem sidekick and then yeah, bookend.
Yeah.
It's funny how you get pedigree from your trainers.
Man, that's a pretty good guy just to have on your resume too. It's like, hey, yeah, by the way, trained by Booker T. Not too shabby.
Yeah, I was always very proud of that fact.
What's like the best advice you think he gave you looking back? Maybe you didn't know it at the time, but looking back at it now.
I always think about this because I'm not from any kind of actual combat background, which I think is actually probably the best background to go into wrestling. If you were not a wrestler, if you were an athlete from something else, I think having an amateur background, an MMA background, like a grappling background are all very helpful in professional wrestling, at least in terms of making the holds look real, making certain things, understanding how things feel. And the one thing that I learned from Booker, not being a combat specialist myself, was if it looks cool, it doesn't matter. You know, like that. And that's always really stuck with me, where it doesn't necessarily matter. You want to do the holds right, but as long as it's not making people raise eyebrows and it looks cool and it's entertaining, then the rule of cool always is what matters.
It's like Ultimate Warrior back in the day. Everyone knew who he was. He's one of the most famous wrestlers of all time. You think that he was great with the wrist lock and stuff? No, of course not. But
nobody comes to see the Ultimate Warrior do a wrist lock.
Yeah. So it doesn't necessarily have to be 100% precise, if you will.
Right. It's more about being in the moment and reacting with the crowd and following their lead.
Does he praise more of like the character end of things, like for you to really use your charisma and character and connect with the audience, or was he kind of just like wrestling based?
Booker was, he definitely was very, he cared about the wrestling, but at the same time, it was, Booker was a character. At the end of the day, like Booker will be the first one to tell you, he only has 5 moves and one of them is this look. And the spin-a-rooney. So, he liked your wrestling to be tight when you did it, but he also understood, hey, the crowd isn't necessarily connecting with the wrestling. They're connecting with the person and the character and, what you're projecting in the ring. So there was a lot of focus on character stuff, which I think is really important now.
Big time. When you get the tryout, right, and then you basically go to ROW, you wait a year, how do you get back on the radar, and how do they scoop you back up, WWE?
Well, I think if I remember correctly, the timeline was I did my 3 months, I did my tryout, and then about 2 months later, they called me back, and they said, hey, we liked you at the tryout, we're going to hire you. And then I was like, great, cool, when can I start? And I said, well, we'll have a class start in 4 more months. So then it became like, okay, we'll wait. But then also we're trying to, not get hurt. So we're playing it a little safe. And eventually I did move from Houston to Orlando, where I started at the Performance Center.
When they first bring in, is it as a wrestler, though, or is it going to be like a commentating role? Because I remember right for a brief period you were commentating down there.
It was always as a wrestler. I had been wrestling at the Performance Center and doing the NXT house shows for about 3 or 4 years before commentary even happened.
Oh, wow.
Commentary, yeah, was a complete accident. I was actually doing demos with a friend of mine who was actually training in commentary, John Laquasto. Check out his comedy special on YouTube. He's great. But he was doing commentary. And as a friend, I was like, oh, yeah, no, I'll give you somebody to bounce off of. One of those tapes got sent to Connecticut. And Paul Heyman, who became the lead showrunner of Raw at that time, said, I want a complete facelift, new commentators, new stage, new everything. And I want him to be one of the guys. And I was like, okay, I guess. And, it was a matter of... I wasn't getting a lot of opportunities in ring in NXT at the time because the style of the NXT Black and Gold was very much the independent, 10-year vets. And I was not that. I was more, I was honestly more cut out for what NXT would become a couple years ago when they kind of went back to focusing on athletes and people like that. So when that opportunity came, I took it. And it was brief and I learned a lot, but I'm glad that I ended up returning to the ring in some capacity.
That was an interesting era of NXT because it wasn't the way NXT was kind of originally formed. It was going to be a lot of young guys learning the ropes. So it was definitely a different aspect. Do you kind of wish that it wasn't like that just because you would have got more ring time, you would have got, you know, more crisp out there?
Yeah, I mean, it's the story of my career has always been timing. And, you know, I can look back and say, okay, well, what if I came in and when Baron Corbin was doing NXT, right? Like, I'm more in line with a Baron Corbin in terms of a former pro football player.
Yep.
What if I started when NXT 2.0 was a thing, where it was very strictly characters and young athletes? And you can ask yourself those questions all the time, but who knows? Maybe I wouldn't have gotten, you know, the strange opportunities I got are, I think, what got me to the main roster eventually anyway. So who knows? Maybe I, you know, do NXT and flounder. So
you never know. The thing with NXT, I feel like it never changes, is the name generator thing. Like, I don't know where the names come from. Like, how did you get the name?
They got back to it, right? It's weird.
Yeah. Like, well, how did you get your name? Is it literally like, hey, write down five names and we're going to pick one out of a hat? Like,
it was quite literally write down 10 first names, 10 last names, and then we'll decide which one you like. I got Dio Madden at the time. And I just had Dio was one of the names on the list, and Madden was on one of the names on the list, almost as a joke. And that's the one they went with, completely at random. I don't know if that's how they're still doing it, but yeah, that was the name generator.
I would think all the way back. I mean, this is obviously pre NXT even OVW, like Dolph Ziggler. They're just like throwing two random names together. Roman Reigns, Seth
Chet
Rollins,
Durgler. Yeah, it's always something like first name, last name.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I forget the girl that just debuted. It was like Ren Sinclair. It was just like,
you can tell
it's just a name generator thing. It is strange. It's one of those things where, right, you just have to get over this and just kind of plow forward. Everybody will remember the name, you know, eventually.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, obviously you could be crippled by a really bad name. I think it would have always been an uphill battle for Slapjack to get over with that name. But my example is always L.A. Knight. People didn't like L.A. Knight as a name. They preferred him as Eli Drake. But after he was Max Dupri, they were sure happy to have L.A. Knight back. So the name doesn't matter as much as people think.
Crazy. I will want to talk about that in just a second. But when you are Dio Madden, right, and you do commentary, do you think it's a long-term thing, or do you think it's just a kind of a placeholder to somehow get you on the main roster as a wrestler?
After my first show, the first Raw that we did, Michael Cole is waiting backstage at Gorilla, and he's giving me, Vic, and Jerry the King Lawler a standing ovation and says, you guys are going to have this job for the next 10 years. So I thought that was it. I thought, okay, no, I guess I'm a commentator now. And I was happy to do it because I love wrestling and I love being around wrestling. But at the end of the day, that was never the plan, was to just be a commentator for the rest of my life. But now I have this skill set that I don't think a lot of people have, and I can always apply it. And I won't be able to take bumps forever, but I can talk a lot.
Michael Cole, I mean, he knows his stuff. He's been there for, what, 26 years or whatever it is? I mean, he knows. How come he was wrong on that? Was it just a change in creative, a shift?
Well, for me, it was when I looked down at Brock. They didn't realize that I was bigger than Brock, and Vince had the realization that I was bigger than Brock Lesnar, the Beast. And he was like, why is that a commentator? So,
right, yeah.
Plans change. That's the famous saying in WWE, is card is always subject to change. My 10-year plan was definitely subject to change.
That is true, though. Like, way too big to be a commentator, right? I mean, just...
And it was actually hard to work around. Yeah, it was hard to work around because being so tall, and they're so particular about their camera shots and their... They're really big on like, oh, we want to go on camera and have everybody be at the same level. And Vic Joseph, who's in NXT right now, is also pretty tall, not as tall as me. And Jerry Lawler is not nearly as tall as me. So we had this weird setup where I'm in a split, Vic is standing normal, and Jerry's on a box. Like, we're all trying to, like, we're working really hard to just get all of our faces in a row on these camera shots.
Wow, damn, I mean, that's nuts. That's like, you know, old school comedy act or something. You know what I mean? Like, hey, yeah, don't let the people see your feet and how tall you are, what you're doing underneath the camera.
TV magic.
Yeah. Well, like, or when those people used to wear like shorts or whatever, and they got a suit up top.
It's
like,
suit don't up show top and shorts on the bottom.
Wow, that's crazy. But the thing is, too, it's like, okay, Lesnar beats you up, right? And kind of like takes you off. I thought that was going to lead to something with Lesnar, but it never happened.
I did too. Yeah. No, I don't fully understand what the thought process was. I think it was brought up as a pitch, because a lot of things are brought up as a pitch. And from what I understand, Vince felt like it would be confusing because I wasn't an established NXT talent. So he thought it would be too confusing for the fans to reintroduce me as a wrestler, whatever that means. So unfortunately, like, I could have gotten beat up by Brock Lesnar in 5 minutes, but it would have made my career in that way. So who knows?
Weird. Just to me, it seems like simple creative. You're bigger than him. You were a wrestler. You were an NFL football player. He beat you up. You kind of want revenge. And then you guys have a match, and then, you know, whatever happens. You know what I mean? It just seems simple to me.
It's very simple, and I think, you know, it could have it would have been very easy to do. Unfortunately, that's just not what they wanted to do at the time.
Now, you mentioned the Black Cane. You mentioned the Mace, Retribution. What do you think went wrong with Retribution? At first, it was like mysterious. What's going on here? What do you think went awry?
Looking back, I think we had a lot of very cool moments as Retribution. As much as, you know, it's easy to look down on that time, I think Retribution was one of the hotter acts during that pandemic era, because Roman wasn't there. We had a very awesome segment with the late Bray Wyatt and Alexa Bliss. We had the moment with the Hurt Business, which I really feel like made the Hurt Business when they brawled with all of the guys in the masks. And we had all of these very cool moments, but there was no direction for the Retribution thing. And at the same time, because we're in the Thunderdome, because there is no crowd and there is no crowd to base our, you know, there's nothing to listen for. We don't know how people are supposed to feel about us, because we don't know how the crowd's reacting. They're pressing a button to make us, they're just booing or cheer. There's no real human interaction. So we don't even know like what a Retribution looks like if it was in front of a crowd, because it never got to it.
When that happens, right? Isn't it almost like, man, you need the crowd there to kind of see how this heel faction is going? Is it like a weird?
Do.
Is it like a weird debut? Almost like, shouldn't we wait, or you can't wait?
Well, we couldn't wait, because I don't think the entire Retribution run was almost 6 months, close to a year, and that was all in the Thunderdome. We were in between the Performance Center Thunderdome and the Orlando Thunderdome and the Tampa Thunderdome. That was that period of TV. It was just, that was how it was. But yeah, it's so hard to base your performance around nothing. And, you know, Twitter reactions were obviously universally negative, but it's such a small portion of the audience. And to know what kids thought of Retribution, or to know what, if people maybe liked it ironically, or to play it as a funny thing, or as an actually legitimately scary thing, we would never know. I always get, when I do signings and stuff, people are like, oh man, I loved you in Retribution. I was like, really? Cool. I wish they knew that.
Were you supposed to be unmasked? Like the guys in Retribution, or was it supposed to be more of a mystery?
From what I understand, they unmasked the ski masks because they thought that Fox, because we were on SmackDown, thought that we were Antifa. And they were like, you should probably not do Antifa. So then we became Bane from The Dark Knight Rises.
Yes.
And I don't know what we were supposed to be. I always wanted to be like Power Rangers villains, like where, you know, you've got like different, you know, you got all these little weirdos, but they all work together as like a unit to take on good guys.
Hey, Lord Zedd could have came in, right?
Yeah, exactly. No, Ali was our Lord Zedd. Imagine, you know, you have like your, is it, what's the guy's name?
Goldar?
Goldar. You have your Goldar, that's me, and then you have, you know, your putties, that's Slapjack. So you really have you have a Saturday morning cartoon formula there that I think could have worked.
And you had a Rita Repulsa, right? I mean, you had that.
Yes,
too.
We did. We literally did. Reckoning is, Repulsa.
Yeah. The thing is with like that group, okay, the Bray Wyatt thing was cool. And when you guys destroy the performance center and breaking glass and stuff, that's cool. But then you guys got the complaints. That's what it was from Fox. They were saying that was like rioting and Antifa. That's what the really was the complaint of it.
The initial thing, the breaking stuff, the actual stuff that was basically just simulating rioting. That was the initial complaint, which caused them to pivot. And the more they pivot, the less they kind of, the more they lose their direction. And without your direction, then you really go nowhere. And if you're not going somewhere and winning matches, then you're basically dead in the water.
Did they tell you the end game of what it was supposed to be originally for the group?
No. Oh. Nobody knows. Especially with Vince ideas, like some of that stuff is just going to go down with him.
Is he just like all over the place? Is he something where he's just going to literally take the piece of paper and rip it up and throw it away? Like you hear the stories. Is he just changing his mind just like that?
Yes, 100%. His plans change, his mind changes. He's feeling one way about something one week and another way of another week. He's like a natural disaster. You're just trying to work around him.
Isn't that too unpredictable though? Like you're getting used to something and then that happens.
It's very unpredictable, but at the same time, like, man, you think about the history of WWE, you think about the history of this business, how many of these great things that you remember, like looking at your wall behind you,
yep,
that's all Vince. You know, like he missed plenty, but he hit a lot. And when he hit, like there's nobody that hits like Vince McMahon when he's hitting. So, Yeah,
him and that Hogan guy hit a couple home runs together.
Yeah,
for sure.
Hit a couple home runs together for sure.
Was Ali always supposed to be the leader of Retribution?
No. They didn't know. They didn't know who they wanted to be the leader of Retribution. We saw Ali get told that he was going to be the leader of Retribution, and me and Dijak looked at each other and we were like, all right, this is going to determine the rest of our careers. If he looks at us and he goes, then we're screwed. But if he comes at us and he's like, all right, how are we going to do this? That's what he did. So that's how we approached it. Retribution was always very much an us against everything, because we felt like the creative wasn't behind us necessarily. The fans weren't behind us necessarily. So we were just down to try and make it work however we could. And, you know, I will always remember that fondly because I like us against the world scenario.
Hey, Michigan versus everybody, right? It worked for the Wolverines, so yeah.
Absolutely.
When you look at it, though, is he too small to be the leader of a guy like you and Dijak, or does that work perfectly that he's like this smaller guy, but he's, you know, he's good in the ring? Like, does that work or does that not work?
I think that's the beauty of it. I think in wrestling, right, at the end of the day, it's going to come down to being in the ropes and having a wrestling match, right? And I think everybody, in theory, should be able to win a wrestling match because of a certain strength. If you're looking at me and Dijak, it's, we are big guys. If you look at somebody like Ali, he's technical, he's intelligent. So, I liked Retribution because, and if you look at it, there's never been like a more diverse, multicultural, varied body types. Like Retribution had like something for everybody. We had an Australian guy. We had a half black, half Korean girl who fights, you know, like Joshi Strong style. We have Dijak, who's a big guy that flies all over the place. You've got me, that's, you know, like an agile big man. And Ali, who's excellent at like everything. it's like a super team that never got off the ground.
It is interesting. Do you think the gimmick held you guys back, though? Like, in the mask, and it wasn't, like, normal masks. Some of them were, like, a little goofy. I know Dijak at one point was making fun of the mask. But, like, do you think it was, a too goofy just the way the presentation was?
It could be, but at the same time, like, goofy stuff works. I think R-Truth is one of the greatest of all time, and R-Truth is hilarious. When it comes down to it, if you put your weight behind something, it'll work eventually. We just never had the weight behind us.
Do you think you and T-Bar, a.k.a. Dijak, I mean, do you guys think you could have been, like, tag champs? Or it seemed like they were giving you guys a decent push, like getting decent wins over some pretty big names, and then all of a sudden nothing.
We thought for sure, like, at that time. So now I think it's very hard to become tag team champions. I think the tag team championship is a bit of a, like, main eventer. Hey, you're not the main champion right now, so you can be tag team champion right now, kind of thing. It's been tied up in the Bloodline storyline for the better part of the past 2 years. Cody Rhodes came back and he was a tag team champion. Like, that is a pretty untouchable belt right now. But when me and Dijak were together, we thought that was completely within our reach, and we thought for sure, it's like, man, why can't we be Demolition? Like, we could surely be Demolition. We thought it was such an easy pitch, especially to Vince, who's supposed to famously love, you know, big guys. It just never took off.
Yeah, it just seemed like you guys were, when you just look at the roster, even if you're in there with Strowman or whatever, I mean, you guys were huge. It just looked like okay, how are these guys going to lose? Like, it almost doesn't make sense sometimes when you look at some of the guys.
Yeah, I agree.
It's like, these guys are huge. Come on, they should be dominating the roster. Yeah.
And so I think I'm fine, but as good as Dijak is, I think Dijak's legitimately one of the best wrestlers in the world. It's criminal. Like, it's criminal that he's not more heavily featured in the main shows.
Yeah, I agree. He's been good for a while too, Dijak. So when they split up the group, what do they tell you? Hey, we're going to do this Maximum Male Model thing, or like, what happens next? Because it's just over.
When we split up the group, they had me and Dijak chokeslam Ali. They kept us together a little bit. Not as Retribution, but basically Retribution. They split us up in a draft, and I ended up on SmackDown where I didn't do anything. Dijak ended up on Raw where he did a lot of main events. Main event, the TV show, not main event of Raw.
Yep.
I was sitting at home for a while, and I'm going back and forth with a writer about different ideas of things that I could do when I come back. And some of the things that were thrown out were an executioner. They ended up deciding that was too close to Retribution. They were going to go with a mercenary, like a cyberpunk Blade Runner mercenary, which I really like the idea of.
Yeah, that's
cool. And when I thought we were going to go with that, I get a call and the writer says, hey, we need you at SmackDown this week. I was like, cool. Are we doing the mercenary thing? And he says, no, Vince has an idea. I was like, what's the idea? He's like, you're going to be a male model. I was like, all right, great. You're going to do it with Mansoor. I was like, even better. Because Mansoor, we're actually best friends in real life. We go on family cruises together with all of our kids and wives. So I knew that if we were working together in any capacity, we were going to be able to do something entertaining.
That's awesome, though. He's your best friend. I mean, I didn't know that. That's pretty cool to be able to work with him like that.
I was very lucky. As much as I was unlucky in WWE, I was very lucky in the people that I was able to work with in WWE, because by complete happenstance, Retribution was consisting of Shane Haste, who's also one of my best friends, Dijak, who's one of my best friends, Ali, who was like a mentor to me, Mia, who's also a good friend of mine. And I've just always been surrounded in storylines and in groups with people that I love and respect. Even when we were feuding with people, we feuded in Retribution. We feuded with Ricochet, who I'm great friends with. We feuded with the New Day, who have been like mentors to me and Mansoor for a very long time now. At least from the learning trees and the people that I've been able to associate with, I've been very lucky in WWE.
Maximum Male Models. Why is that an idea? Where does that come from? Why does he even have that as an idea?
Vince apparently wanted male models on his program for a year prior to that idea actually coming to my doorstep. And I guess we just ended up being two decent looking guys who weren't doing anything at the time. And he decided we were perfect for it. And he was right. We were perfect for
it. My thing, though, when I watch wrestling, sometimes I can't get into some of the characters because I can tell that they're not into the character. Like Toni Storm, for instance, on AEW is the opposite of that. She's so into this character. I thought it was lame, but she's so into it. I kind of like it now because I can tell she's so invested. You guys, same thing. At first, I'm like, this is horrible. This is the worst. But you guys were so into it. I was like, I don't know. Now I'm kind of digging it. Now I like it. Like, this is actually pretty good. Were you really that into the character?
So the outlook that me and Mansoor always had was because we didn't get the opportunity to say, hey, I want to be me. Hey, I want to do this. That was never an opportunity that was afforded to us, unfortunately. But we had the understanding that if you are putting all of yourself into a role that's given to you, if you are having fun with that role, if you are doing everything to try and get that thing over, even like your lizard brain, the fan's lizard brain psychically understands, hey, these guys are having fun. We don't have to go out and say, hey, we love this. We love being Maximum Male Models. You guys understand that we are having fun doing this. And for me to get to travel the world with my best friend, have silly matches, you know, it's a completely different character for both of us. We're just throwing stuff at the wall and coming up with fun ideas. We were having fun. It wasn't our idea, and it's not something that we would have ever pitched. But at the end of the day, we love those characters, and I think we really did something entertaining with it. And we just wish that we had more time to do it.
Massey and Mansoir, is that your guys, like, basically interpretation, or is that the names that they gave you too?
That was their idea, and I thought it was hilarious because I had not heard such a funny idea. Because I think the original idea was to change Mansoor's name to Mansoir or Mansoive or something like that. And then they just like, because there was going to be Max Dupree and Mansoir and Mace. Like, they just leave my name, but they ended up changing my name too, which I also think is funny.
I love it. I mean, it's just one of those things where it's so entertaining because you guys were so into it. But the whole thing was, did Max Dupree really fit in with the, even though it's his group, did he really fit in with you guys?
No, we were very surprised when we found out that LA Knight was going to be Max Dupree. Clearly, that was not the role that he wanted, but he gave it 100% when he was doing it. And, you know, it was the opportunity that was presented to him, and he did his best. But when the opportunity to do what got him to the dance came up, of course, we don't fault him for taking that opportunity. And he's been running with it, and he's doing great, and we're very proud of him.
And LA Knight, he just took that to the moon. But it's just funny to think, like, Vince saw him as Max Dupree, and he saw him as a manager of all things, and not like this cut up ripped as we see him today. Not that he got any bigger, he's still the same cut up ripped guy, but he saw that cut up ripped guy as a manager. So weird. Was it age related? Because people always say, oh, Johnny Ace didn't like him, or this person didn't like him. Was it age related or something?
From what I understand, the initial thought was age related. But the thing with Vince, and as I've said in this discussion, he changes his mind every week.
True.
Butch was also supposed to be like a permanent never wrestle manager, and he had him wrestling at some point. The understanding when working under Vince was very much anything can change. As long as you're on the show, then you're at least a piece that can change. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So I remember Mansoor had a conversation with LA Knight at some point where he's like, man, like, yeah, it's weird that they think you're going to just be a manager, but you're a great wrestler. You look fantastic. You're an amazing promo. You know that at some point they're going to let you wrestle.
When you look at it too, it's like, okay, there's something with these guys. Do you pitch the ideas of what we're seeing on TV when you guys are on, or is that them giving you stuff? Because you guys seem like you were like more invested into the character than maybe some others.
So we were very fortunate and unfortunate in a way that, when we were taken off TV the first time after Vince retires and our push ends, we went off and we did a YouTube show, Making It Maximum on YouTube. It's all still there. And that was just strictly us writing our own jokes, writing our own story, and we put out 10 episodes of that, and I think it's some of the best stuff that WWE's put out in a long time. And I recommend anybody who hasn't seen it, go check that stuff out, because I stand by it. I think that stuff is hilarious. We weren't doing anything. That's all we did. And the writers on Raw saw it, and they were like, why aren't we using these guys? We need to have these guys on TV. So that parlayed into us getting moving to Raw suddenly and being put into a storyline with the Alpha Academy. And because they saw what we could do on our own, we had a level of trust that we never had before with the writers, in terms of if we had an idea, we could throw it out there and it would probably happen. They trusted our, you know, comedic timing and our sense of, you know, storytelling enough to let us, yeah, if you have a line you want to throw in, throw it in, which was not the case for the majority of our careers in WWE.
Now, I always talk to Kevin Sullivan, who booked WCW back in the day, and I used to ask him, like, all right, well, like, let's say you're dealing with Raven or you're dealing with Scott Hall. He's like, no, they kind of tell me. You know, it was a different scenario as far as no writers, but he would say they would tell me like what their character would do and how they would do it. And it would be like a collaboration. And then they would agree, you know, to whatever they were going to work on. Was that basically what it is? It's like, okay, we trust these guys so much. We're going to kind of go with where they want to go, but we're going to put our little spin on it.
Yeah. We didn't decide the stories, obviously, but when it came to like the beats and how we get to the stories, they were very receptive to anything we came up with. And I think in an ideal world, that's the perfect way to do it, just because at the end of the day, when it was Vince or even when it's Hunter, they're a certain type of guy, right? Using Raven as a great example, there's no way Kevin Sullivan understands the, you know, what is the mindset of a guy in his 20s and 30s that's in the Seattle grunge movement. Like, that's not his vibe. He's from a completely different world.
Yeah.
And wrestling is a variety show that takes all types. And I think it really should be collaborative if you have, you know, trust in the characters that you've established, that, hey, let the guys who watch Zoolander a bunch figure out what they're going to do with these model segments, kind of thing. And we'll work around what they want to do, because that'll help them look like they're having more fun doing it.
Did you ever think like, okay, this is stupid. Like, come on. Like, I don't want to do this, or not at all?
Yeah, but everything has been stupid forever for me. There was never a time that I didn't do something that I thought was, that I didn't think was already stupid. So, I thrive in stupid.
When you look at, Maxine Dupree, when she comes in, I feel like obviously Max Dupree was almost like round peg, square hole, or whatever you want to call that old expression. But I feel like he didn't kind of fit. She fit, right? I mean, it just felt like Maxine did fit with the group.
She was perfect. I think at the time they were planning on phasing out Max, and I think, and LA Knight would probably tell you this himself, I think they were going to fire him. They were going to replace him with Maxine, who we actually thought, because they didn't tell us that who they were replacing him with, we thought they were just going to put Max in a dress, and that was going to be Maxine. But no, the original plan, I think, was to phase out Max, take him off TV, and Maxine would step into that role of our manager. And she was brand new. I think she had been in the Performance Center for a couple of months. But she was just perfect, and that's me and Mansoor's wrestling daughter. We take all credit for all of her future success, because we molded that little lump of coal into a diamond that is doing great every week on TV now.
And she's one of those performers too. If you know, you're obviously a man watching the show or whatever, you see that, you're like, I'm going to keep this on for a minute. Let's see what she's up to. Yeah, exactly.
And what I think was really good about it, especially with our act, was because we were these, you know, effeminate, you know, weirdos, for us to be flanked by, you know, this beautiful woman, all of a sudden that's like a different level of heat of like, why is she with them? Why isn't she with me? I'm a man's man.
Exactly. Yeah. It kind of does make perfect sense. It's like, wait, this girl is so good. Like, why is she with these guys? These guys are
why nuts. Is she with these guys? Yeah.
I love it though. Like just as far as like the combination, just sometimes with wrestling, it doesn't really have to be like perfect. You know what I mean? It could be stupid, silly, crazy, and it could be something that works out and be superly entertaining.
And I think that's the biggest thing. And what a lot of people need to realize, people who aren't necessarily keeping track of everything that happens in wrestling, we go to small towns for house shows, right? And you go to these small towns and they're expecting Undertaker and John Cena to come out for this house show in 2024. So they don't know who the people on the show are. They don't watch Raw from week to week. They heard wrestling's in town, so they're going to see wrestling. And if you aren't a very obvious character when you step out of that curtain on a house show, they don't know who you are. And it's way more work to try and get, if you're a babyface, to get somebody behind you if they don't know who you are. Or if you're a heel, to get everybody to hate you if they don't know who you are. But with the models, we would just go out and everybody instantly, whether they knew us or they didn't know us, they saw us and they were like, we don't like those guys. And that was so much easier to manipulate a crowd and tell a story. And we had the time of our lives. We had great matches with guys like the New Day, Alpha Academy. We wrestled Hit Row a bunch, where it was just so easy. We didn't have to work very hard because the characters had everybody so invested from jump. We started every match with a promo. We started every match with, we're going to pose for 5 minutes and you're going to watch it. And it was nuclear heat every time. Like, it's so simple when you want it to be.
I love that. Did you guys pull from anybody like Rick the Model Martel or anybody? Were you guys pulling from any old talent? And as far as
all the great models, all the Rick Martel, Tyler Breeze. We had a show in France where I did the French tickler from Rene Dupree. You know, the little
yes.
dance. Yep. I did that dance. We all those guys. I'm actually a really big from my video game days. I was a really big Goldust fan, so to kind of be an effeminate character, I got a lot from him too, because he's also a weirdly big guy playing like a strange effeminate role, so that was kind of a good inspiration for me.
Yeah, 6'6", huge athletic guy playing this crazy character. Exactly. Yeah. When you look at it too, it's like, okay, you have Maxine, you have you guys, it should be good to go, but then the Alpha Academy thing happens and she kind of goes with them. Was that a surprise? Because that just seemed kind of odd, like out of nowhere.
Yeah, it was a surprise. Unfortunately, we got a mandate that we weren't allowed on TV as this character, as these characters anymore, and we weren't really necessarily sure why, but it was specifically that me and Mansoor weren't allowed to be the Maximum Male Models anymore, so we're kind of left back at home. Maxine, obviously, she's doing great, and she was doing great, so they were like, why would we take her off? So they just kind of quietly shifted her over to Alpha Academy, and she's been there ever since. But it kind of left us going back to the drawing board, and then we had to go back to pitching stuff because we wanted to stick together because we thought we were working well. We thought our chemistry was really good together. But when releases times come, we were two guys that weren't doing anything when I think they needed to free up some salary cap to steal from, pro football or basketball. And that was the end for us.
Was the mandate because of the Pretty Deadly gimmick? Because, you know, they're doing a similar gimmick on the other brand. Is that a reason or no?
I don't know that that was why. There's no reason why you can't have two kind of similar gimmicks on, you know, opposite shows. And even, I mean, I thought there was money to be made in just having us feud. We wanted to, pitched having a match where we feuded over who the most beautiful tag team was. And we would have the opposite of a bra and panties match, where instead of stripping off each other's clothes, we'd have to get dressed up in a really ugly outfit and then get a picture taken. And then we, like, after getting our picture taken in an ugly outfit, we could never be seen on the runway again. So we'd have to change characters. Unfortunately, it's just not the direction they were interested in going with. But we're kind of in a position now where we can reinvent ourselves however we want with the freedom of the independence. And, kind of shine ourselves up to kind of be something that other people, you know, we want to be the bell at the ball. We don't want to be the one that's like, hey, please, can we, you know, have a job? We want them to be like, no, please come work for us. That's what we're looking forward to.
Man, that idea is awesome. Get the get dressed, basically, and like ruin your career because you're dressed like a schmuck.
We had a lot of really good ideas that were left on the cutting room floor, unfortunately, that we probably, well, we might save them for ourselves down the line somehow.
Just give me one more like funny idea just from that, like something in that vein where you think of an awesome storyline like that.
Well, another pitch that we had was because we weren't allowed to be models anymore and understanding that we were kind of two characters that have kind of been all over the place in terms of like characterization, we wanted to pitch that we would run a like pyramid scheme. We wanted to be like a Scientology cult where it's like a self-help group and I'm the muscle, Mansoor's the fast talking like snake oil salesman. And we pitched that we would have these commercials that would air during commercial break, like at the tail end of the commercial break, that wouldn't even look like wrestling promos. And then eventually it's kind of it was called The Answer. So it would be just like, do you want to maximize your life? Find the answer, buy this book, call this number or whatever. And then eventually introduce these wrestling characters and establish The Miz, who wasn't doing anything at the time, as our Tom Cruise figure, where we've got him jumping on couches and he's like, he's all of a sudden starting to succeed because he's found the answer. But they liked that idea a lot, but I don't think, we just never got to it.
Man, that would have been awesome too. Damn, this clothes idea and that are two awesome ideas.
Yeah, we're as lifelong wrestling fans, like we have ideas for days. Like we were willing to try and make anything work.
Man, that's great. But as we hit the wind down here, we'll head towards the finish. What is next? What do you got coming up? What's coming down the pike? What's some plans and some goals for you?
Well, plans for this year are just to get back in the ring and start wrestling, showing people what I'm capable of doing, what we're capable of doing as a team, because it's just not something that I think a lot of people have seen. Most of our wrestling has been on house shows in the past couple of years. So to be able to get out there and, you know, show our stuff, show, you know, our character and show the stuff we can do, we're very excited for that. In the immediate, we've got a big show at DPW in Raleigh, North Carolina this Saturday. That's our return to the ring as a tag team. We've actually been doing single stuff since the year started. So we're very excited for that. And then next week, we're going to be at Effie's Big Gay Brunch in Tampa at the Rumble the week after this one. So we've got a lot of stuff coming up. We're going to Poland, like I said. We're going to be all over the world. And, you know, we're just looking forward to the future.
What else do you guys do together? Do you guys stream and stuff together? Because you guys do team up together on some other projects.
Yeah, the first thing, we got fired. The day we got fired, I called Mansoor and I was like, hey, you feel like streaming? Because the 90 days is really, you know, designed to kind of wind down your momentum from WWE. And we were like, man, we're not going to be any hotter than we are right now. And there's nothing stopping us from live streaming. We've had this Twitch channel forever. And it kind of just became something that we did. And we have a blast. We tell fun stories. We play games. We do all kinds of stuff. One of our better streams is TEW, which is a booking simulator, where we travel back in time to the year 2006. And we rebook WCW, ECW, TNA, and WWE. Did I say WWE?
Nope.
With our friends. So it's me, Mansoor, Dijak, and Damo. And we all book different shows. And like we had like a big draft in the beginning. And it's like an alternate universe where WCW has moved to Japan because the competition is too stiff in America. Dijak runs WWE exactly the same way Vince would run WWE in that era. It's a lot of fun. You can follow us on that at twitch.tv/greatblackotaku. And you can find me on any socials at greatblackotaku.
Nice. Love that. Love that. Now, just as far as anywhere else you want to work coming up, like, is there goals or ideas of like, I want to hit here, hit there, like check things off the old bucket list.
I think the biggest thing is places for us. We want to wrestle, you know, in Mexico. We want to wrestle in Japan. Obviously, we'd love to end up in a big company again. But at the end of the day, with this freedom and this, you know, getting the creative juices flowing and the environment of the independence right now, we're really not in a hurry to go anywhere in particular. It's kind of wanderlust right now.
Nice. Love that. But good luck to you guys. You guys seem like you're going to be everywhere. You're dominating and you're doing really good. It's good to see like the XWB guys not be upset or sad about the release, but like thriving from it because they got their creative juices flowing. They actually could do better without it.
Yeah, I think that's the goal is, you know, at the end of the day, no matter how my time in WWE went, they paid me a lot and I learned a lot. And I can't really hold too much against them for anything else. So it's kind of just onwards and upwards from here.
All right. Awesome stuff. Mace, thank you so much for all the time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, John.
This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website TMPTEmpire.com and buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies. Brother. Please welcome in our new sponsor, Underdog Fantasy. Go to underdogfantasy.com and you'll discover that Underdog Fantasy is the best and easiest place to play fantasy sports. Underdog Fantasy lets you draft a fantasy dream team in minutes. Sign up now with the code POWERTRIP and you'll double your first deposit up to $100 in bonus cash when you make your first deposit of $10 or more. That's right, deposit $100 and get $100 for free. Underdog keeps it simple with their easy-to-use website and mobile apps. Pick between 2 and 5 players to fill out your pick'em slip, get every pick right, and take home some cold hard cash. Use that promo code POWERTRIP and get your first deposit doubled up by $100 by Underdog. That's underdogfantasy.com. Use the promo code POWERTRIP today.